So I guess we can get started. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. So, whoa, that sounded like a little bit of feedback. I'm going to hit the start thing. All right. So, well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for coming here, 9 a.m. on the last day of the conference and being a part of the final day of this great show. I really hope you've gotten a ton of value out of this week, and hopefully this morning's session will continue adding to the value that you're gaining from coming to Las Vegas and joining us at SPC. So my name is Ian Hameroff. I am from what we call the Office 365 Technical Marketing team based in Redmond. My particular area of focus is I lead a team that we call the Office 365 Service Experience Marketing team. What does that actually mean? Well, myself and my team, we think about all the things that are important to customers once you're on the service. So things like service, health, and reliability reporting and communications, change management and roadmap. How do you know what's coming in this service? How do we think through communications across service change, across incidents, and a range of things? How do we think about service management excellence, as I like to call it, and helping you both as customers, as partners, be ready to really embrace what it means to be in the cloud and how it's hugely beneficial versus what you may have been doing on premises, but certainly different. And there's a different set of parameters that are involved. So this morning's session, considering we're a small room and we have, according to my little timer here, 73 minutes and 18 seconds, I'm hoping that we can make this somewhat interactive. But I will say I'm going to be a little bit annoying because of the fact that we are recording this session, and I may either repeat what the comment or question that is asked, or if you want to avoid the echo from me, feel free to step up and use the microphone. That way, those who are not as lucky as you to be here in real time can learn from the recording. Does that sound like a good idea? All right. Well, thank you. So this morning, I think there's a bunch of questions I like to ask myself, and I'm really hopeful that you do as well, when you think about Office 365 Service Communications, or the long-winded title that we had for the session about, what are these direct-to-you comms that we drive, primarily out of my team, and working very closely with my colleagues on the engineering side. So over the next 70 minutes or so, I really hope that we can go back at the end of the day and look at, I was successful in answering the following. What is our communications philosophy? Chad and I were chatting before the session about some things he would like to see us do differently in terms of, as a partner who's servicing other customers, our mutual customers, how do you get access to stuff a little bit earlier, or how you can get a view to what's being communicated to the customers that he's supporting. So what's our philosophy around that? Communication is an overloaded term, and I think it's important for us to be able to answer the question of what are the various types of comms that you can expect from Microsoft, and then what are the different channels that we have? And I will stop for a second and mention that the channels thing is important because as we've been maturing our service, I hope you've been noticing that these channels are starting to be less scattershot across the whole of the product or across the whole of the Microsoft.com domain universe. And we're really starting to pare them down and get them focused. And I want you to walk away from here this morning with some understanding of what those different channels are and what are the sources of truth for you so you can stay current, either for yourselves, for your customers, or both. What happens when there's change? And I think you'll see in a few moments that change goes across a number of different categories. There's change like, hey, there's stuff coming to the service, and there's change, something's not really working right with the service. And I'll walk through that, and hopefully you'll have a good sense of what happens, what do we do, what you should do, and what you can expect. As part of that, I will spend a few moments talking about one particular channel a little bit more deeply, and that's one of my personal favorites, the Service Health Dashboard, and do some demos and show you some different ways you can consume that information off the dashboard. And then lastly, and please, let's do make this as interactive as possible, Love to be able to answer your questions, and of course, maybe this is not so much a question, but you know, listen to your feedback as we're iterating at a very fast clip, and your feedback and your help and understanding, you know, where you're coming from is massively important to the success for all of us with Office 365. So with that, welcome to the fabulous Office 365. The cloud is fantastic. How many of you are Office 365 customers or partners or on the tent? All right, excellent. So for those who haven't raised their hands, I expect by the end of today, you'll at least be getting a trial tenant. Free for 30 days, you can try it out and kick the tires. You know, I've been around the office business for a very long time. In fact, when I joined Office was back during the early days of Exchange 2010, and you know, I got the opportunity to a colleague of mine from another group within Microsoft said, hey, come over to Exchange. I was just done working on Windows Server 2008, and I said to him, hey, you know, Exchange, you know, didn't we win that? Like, what's left to be done on Exchange? He's like, hey, wait, no, you got to come over here and have coffee. There's this GM, he went out and bought a whole bunch of servers, and he said, we're going to learn how to deliver Exchange in a multi-tenant fashion and at scale. And this was something very different than we had ever done before, right? Like Microsoft was good at writing code, burning DVDs, sending them out, looking to many of you in the room to help our customers get deployed and support. And it was a pretty interesting cycle to happen over, you know, every 3 to 4 years. Instead, what we were doing is we're now going to be right on the front line with you and learn very differently about what it means to run mission-critical pieces of infrastructure like Exchange, like SharePoint, like Link. And I think, you know, as we've been on this journey, one of the things that we've noticed is that things are very different for you and for us when you're running in the cloud. I think I forgot your name, actually. Brian? Ryan. So Ryan and I were chatting a little bit earlier. He's like, hey, you know, as a developer in SharePoint, there are some things that I don't necessarily have access to when I'm in the cloud on SharePoint Online that I may be used to on premises. I was talking to a partner just yesterday, and you know, they were asking about, you know, debugging and, you know, how do they build their code and learn. And you know, when you come to Office 365, there's tremendous amounts of benefits to it. And you know, the basics of being able to stop worrying about keeping hard drives from failing and backing up data, and you know, unlocks the opportunity for you to focus on higher value scenarios, higher value opportunities to unlock new features that you may have never been able to scratch the surface on because you know, you were spending time just keeping the lights on. But at the same time, there's things that are different. You don't have the same level of access. You don't have the same level of insight, whereas you're able to go in and if there's something going wrong or something's not running as you expected, you don't have the same ability to go down to the server room, remote into the systems, run some PowerShell, or even look at the event logs on the system and understand what's happening. And that's why, for us, it's really critical to make sure that we're creating a good connection between us and you as customers and partners to understand how we can communicate to you, how we can give you the confidence to know that while you're moving from on-premises to the cloud, things have changed, but you haven't lost control. And I think one of the things that's important to embrace about that is, you know, we've moved away from this notion of shipping a version of any of these products on an every 3 to 4 year life cycle. You know, these waves of releases. Like we used to talk about Office releases, wave 14, wave 12, wave 15. Yeah, we've moved away from those ways where there's a whole bunch of innovation that's worked on over a 2 to 3 year period. We on the marketing side get 18 months to start building up awareness and driving, you know, excitement and getting you readied for what's coming, to what we consider now ripples, where, you know, we move from life cycles of every 3 to 4 years to as often as every 3 to 4 weeks. And this in particular is both exciting, but also requires us as partners to be able to understand how to embrace change. And when change comes in its many forms, it's important to realize that this is a benefit and an opportunity for you as you're looking to move to the cloud. So, you know, just to put a fine point on it, I ask you to realize it's critical to understand what change means in the cloud, the types of change. I also encourage you to attend after this session my colleague's Jake Zabrowski's session on change management, where he's going to go a little bit deeper into how you should think about executing on change. For this session, what's really important is the fact that clear, reliable, predictable service communications is also critical. And that's a lot on me and my team and what I want to walk you through here this morning so you can get a little bit better handle of what we mean by all this. All right, so that's the preamble. Let's start getting into some of the meat here. So first, I talked about there's all these different types of change. I think it's probably best to categorize it across four areas. And you know, certainly welcome your feedback if these feel like these are the right areas or there's maybe some things missing. But you know, over the last several years, as we've been running this service and maturing it and you know, going from business productivity online to Office 365 and beyond, we think we can distill things down into four categories. First, I just spent a bunch of time talking about this ongoing cadence of functionality updates. This is new things coming to the service. You saw on Monday, hopefully in the keynote, everybody attended and saw some of the things that Jeff and Julia and Arpin and McCall demonstrated and spoke about, you know, like the Office Graph, new exciting apps like Oslo, new capabilities around compliance. All those things fall into the category of ongoing functionality updates, that these are things that in the past you'd come to an SPC and there'd be all this pent-up excitement and anticipation because we had been working for several years to a moment. Now we can come out and talk about things like the Office Graph. We can demonstrate things like Oslo, and it's not completely done yet. It's not shipped into service yet, but because we're iterating so quickly, we can get in front of you more sooner in the process. We can take feedback, and we do listen, and we can keep iterating on it and get it out there. But that also creates interesting things that, like Chad and I were chatting about earlier, too, is like, you know, want to be able to understand what's coming so you as a partner can better service your customers so they can help embrace these ongoing changes. There's a set of changes which really don't affect customers as much, but it's things that we do on our side, things that we're doing within the service that update the platform. You know, that we make changes inside the guts, patching. Some of it does affect customers when we make changes to, like, we need to have you change your DNS record, or you know, we make some configuration changes that within our platform that we call Office 365 within the fabric. But it's a series of change, and I'm not going to go into too much detail on this one because I have a slide that helps you understand or maybe wrap your head around how to think about ongoing functionality updates and planned platform updates. But it's important to know that we are thinking about these as distinct things. This one's really important and something I'd like all of your help with, and that is what we call evolving the system requirements. And by system requirements, we're talking about, yeah, we'll take care of keeping Exchange and SharePoint and Link and Yammer and all the moving parts within the service up to date and upgraded to the latest and greatest, keeping it as evergreen as we possibly can. But that doesn't excuse any of us to not think about keeping the clients, the apps, up to date, web browsers. And we understand, too, that this is a big request on our behalf, and we're doing a lot to help give you as much line of sight as possible about when we're changing those requirements, as well as changing the way we think about what system requirements mean. Not give you sort of the hard and fast, it works or it doesn't work, but really help you better understand that we're actually designing experiences within Office 365 to work with certain versions of web browsers, certain versions and releases of the Office client, and just by its proximity, even OSs. So we'll talk a little bit about how you can stay current and understand what system requirements mean and how we communicate when we change that. And then lastly, you know, there will be moments in any service, whether it's hosted by us or by anybody, or even within your own environments with your on-premises deployments, where there are service incidents. And these could be little hiccups, or they can be, in the rare occasion, something more significant. And we consider this a type of change, because it's a change in your experience. If you flip on your PC or you whip out your iPhone and you don't see mail on there, that's a change. And it's important, just like we communicate these other three, this last one, my team spends a lot of time thinking about how do we communicate and help you understand and remain confident in the service when times are good and when there are times that are not as great. So those are the four categories of change. And between myself and Jake later today, hopefully you'll get a little bit of sense of how to wrap your head around these different elements of change. For this session, I think it's really important to make sure we talk a little bit about what's Microsoft's communication philosophy. Now, we're constantly maturing, we're constantly learning, we're on this journey, and I'm going to say this is the framework by which myself, my team, my counterparts in engineering and across all moving parts of Office 365, this is what we aspire to, and I hope every day you see us continuing to meet these goals and as part of our philosophy. But do hold us accountable to it as well, because I know there's probably cases where you look at things on here and I say, well, that one time I didn't see this be as timely as it could be, but just know that this is our philosophy and this is what we're working against. We're measuring ourselves against really four categories of when we think about service communications. Number one is timeliness. You know, it's so important for you and for us that when things are happening in the moment, that we are timely with giving you the information you need. And this is not just a statement about service incidents where, you know, we want to make sure that you're able to, let's say if you're the tenant admin and there's a service incident and you get the phone call from your CEO, what the hell is happening here, and you don't have any information, we haven't been timely in giving you what you need to know to answer that question. And we're getting better and better at that, especially when it comes with service incidents. And I'll show you some of the things that we've been doing there. But timeliness is also about giving you enough time to embrace evolving system requirements, to embrace things that are coming into the service, you know, wherever possible, where we can give you enough runway to know what's happening. And timeliness, I put this first because I think this is the most important thing, because the rest of it is as important. But timeliness gives us a sense of that confidence that you're in lockstep with us. And you know, as the session abstract, as well as what I've said in a couple of slides mentioned, you know, this communication channel we're establishing between us in Redmond and you as our customers, whether you're in Connecticut, in Phoenix, or in the UK, like that timeliness channel, that direct communication channel, it's got to be delivered in a timely fashion across all four types of comms. Targeted. This is one of my favorite ones. In the early days of the service, we would do things, and again, this may be more of a comment around service incidents, but you know, we would potentially broadcast to the entire world an issue that was affecting a handful of people. And it could be very challenging. If I was sitting in the audience and in your shoes, I can understand and totally appreciate how challenging that is. If suddenly you get a notification or you see some blip on one of the dashboards that there's an issue, but you're scratching your head because you're not experiencing any problems, it just creates more confusion and I think erodes confidence in the service. We've been investing heavily in things like the message center, in things like the service health dashboard, in things that are within the service in its very fabric to allow us to be extremely targeted with information. So if it affects Ryan in Houston, we don't need to let folks over in the UK be aware of it, because their service is up and running fine. There's no change to their experience. But I want to make sure Ryan knows about it, and I want to make sure he knows in a timely fashion, and he knows what actions to take, if any, and that we're moving away from having this shotgun effect down to getting very laser-focused. And I think you'll continue to see more and more improvement around that. You know, when we look at some of the most recent things that happened, We're getting, in the 60 to 70% range of just targeting communications to those tenants affected. And our goal is continuing to get more and more targeted in there. And I'm very excited about what we're doing around that. Accurate. This is probably a notion of like, hey, this is just table stakes, right? I mean, we can't be sending out inaccurate information, right? It's like, but it's important for us to have this as part of our philosophy. And I think this is less about whether or not you should trust the communications we deliver to you, and more about making sure that you feel clear of where you should go to be communicated to, whether it's about new features of functionality, whether it's about understanding what may be happening in the service. Instead of having all these different sources of the truth out there, I believe accuracy is not just related to what's written in the piece of communication, but also where it's sourced from. And I'll talk a little bit in a few moments about the major channels by which you can get the accurate information of what's happening in the service. And then lastly, flexible. And I purposefully made this a little bit flexible, a little malleable, because I think about flexibility in a number of ways. Probably the easiest example and something I will show you is giving you the flexibility to be communicated to and stay current without having to drag around your laptop, your tablet, like giving you things like mobile apps, giving you things like experiences that are built into where you're already working today, like the admin center of Office 365, to be communicated to. Not have to rely on a separate website or a separate source, or having to be tied to a station, to a place to stay current. So you could be at this event, and if something is happening, you can very easily check your mobile phone and find out what's happening, give you that flexibility and self-service aspects to it. All right, so we spent a few moments talking through the high-level elements of why I feel this is really critical and why I hope you will also see it's critical when you think about change and you think about what life is in Office 365, that communications is at the core of our working relationship. We talked about the different types of change and our philosophy. Let's spend some time now going through these different categories and help you get a better understanding about what we're doing here and what you can expect from us. So the first is I'm bundling number one and number two together as functionality and platform updates. And I'm going to hope, but if it's not, that's okay, that you've seen this slide once or twice before, either in an engagement with a Microsoft account team, or maybe with a partner, or maybe you yourselves have delivered this slide as you're talking to potentially your customers. And this is what we call sort of our service principles, or I tacked on service update principles. I can't say this enough. When we think about Office 365, one of the big elements around it is this whole notion of continuous innovation, but on the other side of the scale, on that balance, is confidence and control. And while control means different things in the cloud, like obviously we can't say to you, hey, when would you like this update deployed? Because we can't do that with millions and millions of seats, tens of thousands of tenants. But we can give you some controls about how you can understand where things are flowing, how you can understand what tools you have to keep the information and the data and your businesses that you're putting in our cloud, how you can put the right level of boundaries and borders around it to protect it. So when we think about this continuous innovation with that confidence and control, it's across these three elements. We're delivering on a continuous release cadence, new features and value to you. It's no surprise this is a subscription-based model versus buy once and perpetual base, is because we have a contract that we're renegotiating with you as a customer every day, every month. And part of that contract is I want to get access to new cool things and unlock new scenarios and new abilities to be even more productive using things like the Office Graph or having the tools of in the compliance center that McCall demonstrated. And we have we take on the burden of keeping the platform up to date and patching. You don't have to be worrying about Patch Tuesday anymore. And you do get the benefits of this, not having to wait 3 to 4 years to see this next release coming out. It's also about making sure that we think about security and building trust with you, and meeting that through the controls we put in the product, our ability to demonstrate our compliance and adherence to a whole range of global sets of requirements, whether it's CGIS in the U.S. or FedRAMP or other ones that are applicable to the various regions of the world. And then lastly, it's about the ability, as we're updating the service, as we're making change in the service, that we can listen to your feedback. We can see how you're utilizing the system in real time. And because we've moved to this faster paced, more agile development model, we can quickly identify maybe where there's some common support problems and engineer into the product solutions for you. And this is a great set of principles by which we think about change and updates within the service. So how should you think about it? I mentioned earlier that we have these ongoing functionality updates, and then we have these platform updates as two categories. And we can talk a little bit about how we communicate some of that. So first, functionality updates. And I think it's best to separate these into two categories. There's these ongoing feature updates, and to give you some examples, very recently we've made some tweaks to the OneDrive for Business, formerly known as SkyDrive Pro. We did some storage increases there, or on Exchange Online we made the mailbox size larger, or little features and functionality that we drop in, as well as big features and functionality. That's one set of feature updates, and that's kind of that cadence that I'm talking about. There are going to be other types of updates, too, that we bring to the service, which may be much larger in scope. For example, when we shipped Office Mobile for the iPhone, or when we brought the OWA app for iPhone and iPad, those are new pieces of functionality, things that were not in the service before. I guess Office Graph and Oslo could be examples that could fall into this category as well. These are net new scenarios, net new experiences, versus the feature updates are just the evolution of things that you already have in the service. So when you think about those two categories, I think, of course, about how do we communicate this to you. And as you can see in the gray bar at the bottom of the boxes, we seek to give you a view into these new features and functionalities on a 1 to 3 month roadmap. And honestly, I've been asked before, why can't you give me a 2-year roadmap, Ian? And the reason why goes back to that previous slide, where we're constantly responding, we're learning, we're deploying. It's very different than the old days, where we would sit and plan for 6 months and then spend 18 to 24 months developing what we plan, tweaking from feedback through TAP programs and betas, but we're doing it very differently now, right? We're being responsive, we're developing more quickly, and our horizon of what we're going to feel confident that's going to be shipping is really about 1 to 3 months. And today, we do communicate that through some internal processes with our Microsoft account folks, our field sellers. In fact, I don't know if many of you are aware of this. You can ask your Microsoft account rep to come in and give you a 1 to 3 month roadmap overview. One of the things we learned, though, is, that's great, and we love to be able to have our account teams as a services company, not just a software company, spend time with you more than just coming in to help renegotiate the contracts. It's more about this ongoing relationship. But we also learned that this doesn't scale very well. Maybe you don't have an account rep. Maybe you're a partner and you don't want to have a Microsoft account rep go to every one of your customers to tell this 1 to 3 month roadmap story on a regular basis. So one of the things that's really exciting that my team is going to be launching later this year is we're going to be taking what is internally a very one-on-one experience, and we're going to be launching what we're calling a public roadmap. So this public roadmap will be on an office.com or, you know, a public website, and we're going to give you insights into what's coming in the service in that left-hand side on a 1 to 3 month sort of window of time. I will say that there will be elements on that public roadmap that won't show up there, and those are the things that are going on the right side, because we may be holding them back for bigger moments to be able to come to future SharePoint conferences and unveil things. But the things that are going to start showing up and that you want to have, you want to give your users or your customers a little bit of heads up on, or help them prepare for this change, we really hope to have the majority of that show up on this public roadmap. I put a star up there on the side because we're still working on what this is going to look like. But you can get a sense of what we've been doing today through Yammer, if you're familiar with the way Yammer demonstrates sort of their pipeline of what innovation's coming down the line. We took a hard look at all the different types of roadmaps that are out there, and we feel, as part of that critical communication, having this public roadmap is going to be an important tool in your arsenal to stay current and understand these functionality updates. Again, I just want to put the point out, there will be some things that we won't communicate with any advance notice, but these are going to be new scenarios in most cases, so it's not like you're going to come in Monday morning and have to talk to your users about, you know, new pieces of functionality like groups showing up. Instead, these will be like net new scenarios, so they'll just be excitement generated around that. And then there's these platform updates. Now, platform updates really fall into three categories. And we spend a lot of time defining internally this word disruptive. And I will be the first and the last person to admit, like art, disruption is in the eye of the beholder, right? The beauty in art or the disruptive nature of change, I'm sure if I sat down with each of you, you could describe a different type of disruptive change that may not necessarily fall within those three bullets. So what I'm going to do instead is say, here's what we define disruptive change as, and I hope we can agree that this is the protocol when we say disruptive change. We really mean things like, we're changing an API. You know, you saw Arpin, hopefully on Monday, talk a little bit in the keynote about the work we're doing to continually provide APIs on the developer platform so you can extend what Office 365 does, either with your own line of business apps, or stitching Office 365 into existing processes, or if you're a partner who builds applications, you can create that stitching together. So if we have to make any changes to that, which, you know, happens, we would consider that a disruptive change because it requires you to take some kind of action or do something differently. The same is when we deprecate features or functionality. I know I may be picking a fight in the desert here, but things like, you know, InfoPath and what we're doing with InfoPath is one of those things that, yeah, this is a disruptive change for you, and we want to give you notice ahead of time because you're going to have to do something different. And the same is true about system requirements change. As we evolve the system requirements, as we look to modern capabilities in things like web browsers that allow us to unlock new scenarios or new capabilities, we have to evolve our system requirements and inform you of these. So just like if you have apps that you're building against our API, or you're using features that we may be sunsetting, we want to give you advance notice of that so you can make the appropriate changes. And that's why we're committing to at least a minimum of a year's notice. And my team plays a really hard role in reminding all the different engineering partners that, you know, as they're thinking about these changes, they can't just say, hey, you know, we're going to do this and switch it on the next day. Like, we're representing you as a customer, as partners, and making sure that you get this 1 year runway. And, you know, we're trying to nail this in every scenario, and we also hope that there aren't a lot of disruptive cases, that these are more the exceptions than the norm. It's the upper half of this slide that you worry about mostly. But, you know, do know that our commitment and our philosophy is around giving you a year notice at a minimum. There's another type of change on the platform update side around configuration changes. And these, again, these are not that often. But it does require you to take action. And these are things like we're changing MX records, or you need to make some tweaks to DNS. And again, these are things that we want to give you, you know, up to 12 months notice as appropriate. There may be cases where we can't give you as much notice, but again, we want to give you some runway and communicate that to you with time for you to go in, knowing that not everybody necessarily is the Office 365 tenant admin and has control over your DNS. It may be distributed out across a couple of different players. So it just gives you a chance to make those tweaks with notice. And then lastly, this is all the care and upkeep that we do on the server side, that service side that you never have to see, like applying patches or bug fixes, security updates getting rolled out probably much more rapidly than any of us were able to do back in the on-premises days, or our continual process of fine-tuning and tweaking the product to increase performance. Those things we don't give you any notice to because, one, there's no action for you to take, and two, this is a little bit of what you're paying us for. You're paying us to worry about keeping hard drives spinning, keeping platforms up to date, not worrying that a vulnerability that has been disclosed and that there's a security fix for is not getting deployed on all your servers and moving parts. We take care of that for you so you don't have to worry about it, and thus we don't really think there's a lot of notice required because you just come in and the service is up and running and healthy.
Does no notice mean no communication or communication without?
So great question. The question was, how do we define no notice, seeing that we're not going to tell you at all about it ahead of time and then it just happens and then we tell you about it? Or do we just not say anything? It's really more of the latter, where we're just not going to say anything. Like we're not going to communicate that we patched the servers. Primarily because we believe that's your expectation on us to take care of that. So, did I answer your question? Okay, cool. So let's now talk a little bit more about these channels by which you can learn about functionality updates. One of the awesome channels that I have on my team is the Office blogs. How many of you are familiar with the Office blogs? Okay, just a handful. I hope by the end of today, all of you will be bookmarking or whatever the appropriate contemporary thing is to keep this pinned to your phone or to your desktop or wherever it may be. The Office blogs, first, hopefully you've seen a nice evolution of this, where there used to be about 29,000 blogs across the Office space. We've now brought them all together in a single platform called blogs.office.com. And when it comes to the service, we have this one section in there, or one view on the blogs, around service updates. So if you go to blogs.office.com/Office 365 updates, this gives you a view into where we're communicating when new pieces of functionality come out. As we said earlier, these things are happening on a regular basis, and what's great about the blog is that you're getting from either the program managers or the product managers. In this case, here's a piece of functionality. This is a feature update where we brought S/MIME encryption into Office 365. This blog post is written by one of the team members responsible for this feature, and it gives you the story around it. It gives you a little bit of the insight of what's going into it. This is not a replacement for the help content or TechNet. But what it is that this is a channel that you can go to on a regular basis. You can even subscribe to it and see what's coming in the service. In fact, one of my many stunning demos, I will actually show you. This is the internet, folks. It's early still, I understand. My jokes are terrible, but so this is the Office 360. Sorry, this is the Office blogs environment. And here. You'll probably notice that there's this stuff all over the map here. This is not just specific to Office 365 or to the Office client or such, but what's nice is that you get exposure to everything that we're talking about through this one source of truth when it comes to the blogs. Now, what's great is if you see up here, you can narrow or you can scope this down to things that you care about the most, like where do you use Office, what do you want to see. What's great is that we have this little thing in the corner here called Office 365 Plus Updates. If you click on that, and again, you can create this as your view, this is a view of the feature and functionality updates that we're talking about. So for example, here's this S/MIME one that I talked about before. Let's just look at today. So today is March 6th. If I click on this blog post, you can learn about today we are announcing support for SAML 2.0 Federation with Office 365. And Paul Andrew, who's actually here, you can talk to him. He wrote this blog. He sits about 8 doors down from me. He wrote the blog about what this is all about. And this is a great cheat sheet for you to stay current on everything that's happening. This is primarily directed towards you as IT professionals. It's not an expectation that this is where your end users are going to go. But this is great material if you want to help evangelize features within the service back to your end users. You can link them to the blog as well. And of course, I'm sure some of your power users are going to read this as well and may come a knock and saying, hey, you know, if we're not already in Office 365, we'd love to get this. So, you know, this is a great platform by which you can stay current. You can utilize the blog as a means to create that ongoing stream of here's what's coming in the service. As things get released, and the blog post is generally released upon it being of rolling out and available in the service, once it's fully rolled out, we also start reflecting these changes inside what we call the service description in TechNet. Another way to learn about change in the service is through this new piece of functionality that we introduced not too long ago that complements our other forms of communication, but does so in product, and that is the Message Center. How many of you are familiar with the Office 365 Message Center within the admin portal? Okay, so I'd hope by the end of today, more hands will be raised. And I'll answer your question in just one moment. And Message Center is a place that it's in product. It goes back to that communication philosophy around being timely and targeted and accurate and flexible. This is a place where you can learn about things like, you know, new functionality. So I apologize if this is not completely easy to read. But for example, every month we put in your Message Center, for example, here, what's new in this past month. And I bet you're not going to be surprised. We link back to the Office 365 blog where you can learn more about these different moving parts. There's other things inside the Message Center, too, that are applicable to the other areas of change that we communicate. For example, things like end of life for XP or encouraging you to get to the latest versions of Internet Explorer. I'll tell you one thing, though, that is the secret to success of the Message Center. And I will even step back further. Message Center is a response to what we saw the behaviors around when we sent these communications via email. We saw that we sent these emails, and I'm sure none of you get emails besides the ones we send you, right? Right, so like using email as a channel to communicate to you critical information, change, we saw that awareness was very low. So what we did is like, let's bring that into the product where you're working every day. And my favorite feature is this little guy up here. This little guy up here, you probably can't see it too well, but I put a red circle around that little bell. Have you seen that bell? Have you gone into? In fact, let's take a quick look at this in real time. This notification bell has made a tremendous difference in driving awareness into Office 365. So this is the Office 365 Admin Center. Hopefully, this is a familiar look and feel to you. And if we go here to the top, you can actually see that little notification bell. And if I tap on that, you see, hey, you've got a new message in the Office Office 365. Let's go to the Message Center. So I can either do that directly from the bell, or I can click on the left-hand side here and go to the Message Center, or tap more appropriately. And again, you can see within the Message Center these different types of messages that we're sending directly to the admins, whether it's information about things you need to take action on, like the Windows XP end of support that's coming in April, or it's a great channel for us to communicate things like what's new in the service, and then as I mentioned before, you know, here we say go to the blog to get the details. Now, one last thing before I take your question is we're continuing to evolve this as an important comms channel. And I believe Jake will talk a little bit more about what we're doing here, but this is not a finished product. This is a piece of functionality that we will continue to be iterating and innovating on to provide you more and more of a one-stop shop to be communicated to about all ranges of change. So I'm sorry, you had a question earlier. Okay. Got it. Okay, that's a great piece of feedback. So for those on a recording is, it's great that we moved from email to the message center as a single source of truth, but you would like to have the option to be able to opt in to get email alerts to say, hey, there's something in the message center, go take a look at it. That's a great piece of feedback. I will definitely pass that on to the TPM on my team who looks after that. There's a couple other questions, yeah. Okay. Right. So the point is, these messages, it's great that we have them, but put a critical eye on and ensure that they're clear. If there are actions that need to be taken, that there are steps detailed, and you understand. Yeah. That's a very fair piece of feedback, and it's something I will say, stay tuned. We're continuing to refine this, and we're continuing to make it better and more targeted. And there's a person on my team who's responsible for being the interface between all the people who want to communicate through this channel, because one of the great things about creating a channel like Message Center is everybody wants to use it, and making sure that what comes out the other side looks and feels consistent, and that when we get feedback like from this gentleman that, hey, make this more actionable, make it more clear, We can implement those changes at a single point, as opposed to trying to get 50 different engineering teams or 50 different audiences writing to it. So, but thank you for your feedback on that, and that's definitely something we put a critical eye on, and that we're continually measuring the quality of our communications, not just the frequency and not just our timeliness of it. And that goes back to our philosophy about being accurate. I think accuracy is also about you have a good idea of what we're trying to tell you. So. And hold us accountable. I'll give you my email address. It's on the slides. If you don't see the changes that you would like, let me know. I can help make that change. And let's do one more question. Right. Right. So along the same lines of accuracy and consistent, we're working very hard, whether it's around browser support or other elements of the service, to winnow down all these different sources of information down to a small number, so you can say, if it's in, for example, support, and we'll talk about this in a few moments, when it comes to a client support or browser support, there is a definitive source of the truth for you. And we'll talk a few moments about that. I will say, we're working on this. And it's fascinating. I'm actually becoming quite astute of how to read system requirements in multiple languages, because there's not a day that doesn't go by that someone flings me an email from a different part of the world. Most recently, it was from France, and you're like, hey, our website in France says we support Office 2007 Service Pack 3. And I'm like, no, we don't. We've added our system requirements. And lo and behold, after I went through my rough French, there it was. And so, like, we're tracking these things down and starting to remove them. And what you'll start noticing is these standalone websites, especially internationalized websites, they'll no longer be static content in there. Instead, they'll be going to the single sources of truth. Please, I appreciate your patience while we go through that. And hopefully by the end of today, you'll see some of those single sources of truth or the main source of truth that help you know for sure. But we are aware of that and we are working on it. So, okay. Yes, and I think we've got a good solution for you on there as well. So, and this is not just a blatant attempt to get good review scores. I actually think I have good stuff here for you. So, all right, so that's Message Center. So we talked for a few moments about what we do with the functionality and feature updates and platform updates. The two big takeaways, please learn to embrace the blog. Watch for our public roadmap coming later this calendar year. And then utilize in-product experiences like the Message Center as a way to stay current, and also watch there for that to continue to iterate and improve. Got a couple pieces of feedback there too that I'm going to be taking back, like having maybe the option to opt into email, be more accurate with comms, and those are things that we definitely can take back home. The gentleman was just asking about IE8 or just browser support. This all falls under that category of change that we call evolving our system requirements. And you know, system requirements, we've been spending a lot of time thinking about what does system requirements mean when you move to Office 365? And you know, what's the contract you're signing with us and what's the contract we're signing with you around this? And you know, part of that comes down to being very communicating clearly what our client support policy is. And now, again, the client support piece is really a comment on Office clients, so Office 2010, Office 2013, Office Pro Plus, and browsers. And you can say underneath here, there's operating systems, especially as we continue to invest across not just Windows, but other platforms. But if you were to ask me, okay, Ian, you know, what are the three tenets of Office 365 client support, it comes down to, number one, when you look at the browser-based experiences, like the recently launched Office Online, you know, the evolution of the Office web apps, there are things that we can do within there that is only made possible through latest advances in the browser. And that's why, I'm well prepared for things to be slung my way here, but it's important. That's why we make statements like, we will support the most current release of IE and previous versions, the previous one version back of both IE and Firefox. And this is not because we're hell-bent on getting everybody on the latest releases of IE or Firefox. This is because we can't do the magical things that we're doing in the product when you're using a browser that doesn't have these capabilities built into its core features and functionality. So, you know, examples again, when you look at using late modern releases of the browser, you get modern experiences. If you use older browsers, you may get a light experience. I think when you look at IE8s, if you try to open up Outlook web app and you're in a browser that's earlier than the latest ones, you may notice that you're in a different experience. You're in a lighter weight experience. You may be looking at, hey, this is like webmail from like 1998 or early 2000s. And that's not because we're trying to punish you. It's because we don't have the functionality within that browser to render the modern experiences. So that's why our support stance on web browsers is use the current versions. And in some cases, when you look at like browsers like Safari or Chrome, it's constantly being updated whether you want it or not. So you know, it's important to kind of rationalize how you can support that. And we're doing things to make this a little bit easier by not saying it doesn't work with IE8, but being very explicit about we designed this product to work with IE11 or IE10. And you'll see that language in our system requirements. It's less about a binary discussion and more about what we actually designed the service to work with. And that your expectations, if you're using a browser that it wasn't designed to work with, are not going to be the same, and your experiences are not going to be the same. The same is true with the Office client. And this is really just a statement about if this Office client is in mainstream support, meaning that it's currently in supported through our product lifecycle, which is well published within our support sites and such, you'll get the expected experience. It goes back again. There are things that we can only do with the latest versions of the browsers. There's the only things we can do with the latest versions of the Office client. We give you a great option on the Office client side through Office 365 Pro Plus, which we keep updated for you and keep that an evergreen client, and you have the option to not have to worry about releases anymore and let that be updated as new pieces of functionality like groups or integrations that happen across different products occur or features updates within them versus having to worry about deploying new versions of Office. Again, we are fully appreciative of the fact that saying going from one version of Office to the next version of Office is not a lightweight endeavor. And again, that's one of the reasons why we've brought to market things like the click-to-run technology and things like Office 365 Pro Plus to take some of that burden off of you and help your end users experience the best within the product. So I tried to say this a few different ways. I think my slide says it better. When it comes to things that don't fall into the current versions of the browser or a mainstream Office client, an Office client and mainstream support, the first bullet there is we will not deliberately block connections. We're not going to stop you connecting from IE8. But you may see the experiences, the things that you read about on the Office blog, the things that you get notified about through the Message Center, you may not see show up. Your users may say, hey, where is this new piece of functionality that I just read about on the Office blog? When I open up IE8, it's not showing up. And it's just, again, goes back to the fact that we can't backwards engineer things to allow it to be a modern, scalable, highly performant experience when that capability doesn't exist. And for older things, for older clients and such, we really can't commit to providing break-fix support for it. But we do remain committed when there are security issues. But again, the key takeaway here is that we're not deliberately blocking blocking connections from older clients. So how do you stay current on this? This is another. We were talking before the gentleman's question about where do I know what's the actual answer around support on, for example, IE8. We just did a whole bunch of work over the last few months to take all these different sources of truth around system requirements out of the product pages and put it within the service descriptions that are available on TechNet and that are translated to multiple languages. So it's not just the English version that you have to rely on. So you can go to the English location at this really long URL, which luckily you'll have the slides, you don't have to worry about it. And let's just do a quick look at this to what you can expect. So again, I'm here in the Office 365 service descriptions. These are the current versions of the truth around how we describe what you're getting in the service. And you'll notice here on the left-hand side, if I expand the section that's called Office 365 Platform Service Descriptions, right here in big, beautiful two-line lettering here is the Office 365 System Requirements. For some reason, you're not seeing. Oh, sorry, you are. Never mind. And here you can see, first and foremost, this is updated on a regular cadence. It was just updated earlier this week. We basically update this every Tuesday. And that's not to say that we are making changes that frequently to our system requirements. All of your heads would collectively spin off and explode if we did that, mine in particular. But what we do is as we get feedback, as we get questions around clarification, as we think about better ways to describe what's going to happen in terms of your experience if you're not on the current versions, we make tweaks to this. In fact, just during this week, we made some language tweaks based on some feedback we received. So you can see here, this is not a detailed, long-winded set of information, but instead, it's hopefully a very digestible and consumable single source of the truth. And let's just take a few moments to look at a couple of sections. I'm going to close this so we get some more some more screen real estate. So first, everything I just said on that slide was not Boulder Dash. It's actually committed here in the single source of truth within TechNet. Again, we talked about browser support. We talked about the client support. We talked about our tenets of what it means if you're on an earlier version or an older client. We will continue to say to you, we don't recommend this, but we will not deliberately prevent you from connecting to the service. And I think this is the important thing, lesson here, or important thing to take away is, the quality of the user experience will diminish because there are capabilities missing within older clients that don't allow us to light up the new capabilities and new scenarios that we want. Here, sir, is where the discussion specifically to web browser support, and this is this. Whoops. Uh-oh. Hopefully that didn't. There we go. All right. This is where you can see our definitive statements around IE8 and IE9 in particular. You can read this in detail here and see what we're talking about. Here's one example here with IE8 that. There will be a point in time after April, after it's dropped out of mainstream support, that you'll only get what we call the Outlook Web App Lite experience, which is it's kind of a reduced functionality, very simplistic HTML-based version, as opposed to the rich, immersive experience that you have with Outlook Web App with a modern browser. The same is true here, where you can see about the clients. This is a piece of feedback we just put in. Is instead of having to send you to go fish and find out when your version of Office is going to be in or out of mainstream support, we've added a note right in here and used one of those Tuesday update cycles to put that in there so you don't have to go to our support lifecycle page to find out. You can, again, have a single source where you can see where mainstream support is ending. And then lastly, this is a nice little chart that reinforces my point I made earlier about that this is not a you can use or not use. This is more a statement about what we designed the service to work with. So here you see, when you look at designed to work with IE11, IE10, IE9, we give you this chart across the different SKUs. And you can see here, for example, if we just take the Office 365 small business, and I'll just zoom us in so we can see it pretty clearly. You can see here that this was designed to work with IE11, IE10, but not designed to work with IE9 or IE8. And this is a great chart you can use, and it's constantly updated. One thing that you'll also notice too is we do not require a specific operating system version, but you see the little caveat, or the footnote there that says, we're not going to support operating systems that aren't supported by its manufacturer. If you're trying to connect your TRS-80 to Office 365, I promise you it's not a supported experience. But if you're connecting a modern version of Windows, of Apple, of Mac OS X, or whatever it may be, if it's supported by the manufacturer, these are the experiences you should expect, and you have this handy chart to know whether or not it was designed to work with it. Cool. So that's how to stay current on the system. Oh, sorry. I did say again, we provide a minimum of 1 year's notice on these type of changes. Hopefully, these type of changes of whether or not we're supporting IE11 or XP, those are the types of things that I would describe as it's like getting hit by a glacier. If you get hit by a glacier, we've done something wrong. Whereas a glacier is coming to you very slowly, you shouldn't be hit by a glacier, right? You can easily evade a glacier because it moves extremely slowly. These system requirements changes, these are things we want to make it like you see this glacier. You know that it's coming. You know that in 2015, we're going to be changing our support stance for Office, and that's been communicated for a very long time for that version of Office. So anyway, with that, let's just also remind you that this is the published disruptive change policy where again, and it's kind of in bold, but unfortunately, there's not enough contrast here for you to see it. But right here, right here you can see in this part here that we say Microsoft will provide a minimum of 12 months prior notification. And if you like the benefit of having the source of truth there, you can go to support.microsoft.com/lifecycle, and that's where we publish this disruptive policy. Okay, the last section over the next 10 minutes is probably one that is near and dear to all of us, and that's how do we communicate when, not when something new is coming to the service, but when there's an incident, when there is an outage, when there's a degradation in service experience. And this is we bundle this all under service incidents, and there's a range of them. And just like any situation that we face when we support a product, you know, there are different levels of severity. But I think it's important to just take a moment to remind you what we do in the service to make this a continuous, reliable, and trustworthy platform. And you can see, like, there's these six areas of investment that we have, and these are things that are very iterative. You know, first and foremost, and you should be expecting this from us is, you know, we build redundancy into the service. We spend a lot of time engineering for scale, reliability, and that's, you know, we have physical redundancy, we have data center redundancies, we do data redundancy, we do things at all layers of the stack, and that hopefully means that if there is a hiccup, it's less than a blip on your radar, that things fail over gracefully, they fail over and switch. One of my favorite, and you probably think I'm absolutely insane, but one of my favorite things that I saw recently happen is, and again, it's one of those things that that's not in our control, but our redundancy in the service makes sure that you don't get the side effect of what happened here, is one of our data centers around the world, a fiber optic cable was cut by some construction outside of our facility. And our service was designed to automatically fail over, so there was no interruption of service. In fact, when we communicated this through our tools like the Service Health Dashboard, the line even said, you know, we had this fiber issue, but by design, we automatically failed over and there's no action or no change of experience for you. And we communicated that to you. And that's just an example of the redundancy that we build in. And I guess redundancy's close cousin, or maybe its Siamese twin, is resiliency. It's having those failover areas, you know, where, whether it's in physical data or functionality, but also putting things into the product. So if there is something that's found, and we're seeing more and more of this just happening automatically through the service, that it identifies it's entered an unhealthy state, it immediately implement some kind of self-correction, and it heals itself, and you're up and running again, and there was no impact to you. And that resiliency is stuff that we just build into the product and an important aspect of how you are able to deliver a service at scale in a reliable fashion. Distributed workloads, we make sure that we engineer out of the system monolithic processes, monolithic application development. So, you know, a component can fail, but you can still have access. One that's an example, if we had a minor outage from an identity standpoint, like if you try to sign on right now and there was some issue, yes, there'll be a slight interruption, there's an incident there, but those who are already signed in shouldn't have their experience affected. And, you know, it's the way we're able to do things like that is we were able to, we built a very modular service, and that if there is an issue, if it's a failure, it's usually in a very contained, compartmentalized way, and then we can just easily address that versus having to reboot the server, you know, and try to do things more in a server component isolation fashion. And these are things you should expect from us, being a service provider, and how we engineer and architect our systems. And then lastly, this bottom row is using as much as we can in terms of automation. We're building more and more intelligence into the platform that the platform signals us and says, hey, I think there's something you should take a look at. And if many of you have seen in your Service Health dashboards, there's the we're investigating something, we're still going to find out more information about it. A lot of that's being driven by automation, which if you go back to our communication philosophy, That's all paying off to our timeliness. We've heard from you that you rather know from us that there's something going on that we're looking at versus waiting till we have absolute total detail on it, because you just want to know that we're on it. You want to have confidence in us that, you know, just like you do in your power companies, that when the power goes out at your house, you're not assuming you're going to have to inform them that the electricity is down. And we want to have that same utility expectation that we have a whole process in place to start automatically alerting you, even in the earliest stages, of, if there is an incident. And then these last two areas, this is all just about the learning process we have. You know, whenever there is an incident, we do a great deal of forensics. We go back in, we see what happened. We try our best to apply the lessons learned so this doesn't happen again. There are some cases where we see things happen that have never happened before because, you know, I don't know the last time any of you had millions of users on a system of yours, but that smokes out some things very interesting that doesn't necessarily get caught in our numerous levels of validation that takes place prior to a piece of functionality getting into service. And Jake actually will talk about that if you go to his session later. Again, when a service incident happens, this is a handy cheat sheet to keep in your mind. By the way, this abstracts a ton of detail that goes on under the covers and what we do internally. But, you know, the life cycle of an incident, something happens. In most cases, and this is going to be happening more and more, we will, as quickly as possible, post to the Service Health dashboard that we're investigating something. So just if you start seeing something, you can immediately go to the SHD and learn about it. We also try to make it as targeted as possible. If we think this is just affecting one data center, one farm, one pod, like, we try to just narrow that down to the customers who could be affected, even in the earliest stages. We continually posting updated status. We try to commit on an hourly basis to give you an update, unless, of course, the circumstances of the incident requires us to publish details more quickly. Going back to the question about the quality of the comms, we're constantly reevaluating, and you'll see more and more improvements to make it more readable, more understandable. I have a person on my team, I jokingly call her a grammar cop. She goes after the grammar we use to make sure that what you read there doesn't require you to be a Microsoft engineer to understand it, and that if there's actions for you to take, that's clearly detailed in there, or if it's just the, you know, please stand by, you at least know about what your expectations should be. And then, of course, every incident, we do our best to have a closure statement included in the comms, so you can at least see, this is what happened, this is what we did, and in some cases, it happens in a matter of hours that you get to see this whole thing. And then, this is happening less frequently now because we believe we can do it more through the Service Health dashboard. We sometimes, depending on the nature of the incident, we will post a separate document in the Service Health dashboard called a post-incident review report, which gives a little bit more of the gory details. Can we just hold your question just to the end, just because I realize we're hitting the final minutes of the session. I want to cover a couple of things, but I will get to your question. Thanks for your patience. So I've mentioned the Service Health dashboard a few times. How many of you are familiar with the Service Health dashboard? Okay, good. So I'm just going to do a quick demo here of some things, because I think it's important to note a few things. You may have noticed that you need to be signed in to see the Service Health dashboard. We don't just put this on a public web page. And one of the reasons why we do that goes back to our philosophy around being targeted. When you sign in with your domain, or with your tenant credentials, that allows us to scope what shows up in the SHD to things that only matter to your tenant. And we can't do that unless we know your tenant. And there was a question earlier, like, as a partner who's servicing other folks, not just your own, we've introduced things like the Partner Admin Center, which allows you to see the Service Health dashboards that your own customers are seeing, too. So you can get the level of detail of what's showing up in their dashboard and know that you need to work with these sets of customers versus others. So you can see here, right on the main dashboard, there's this, and, you know, I was joking with Chad earlier, I was like, you know, I'm happy it's all green, but it would be nice to show you, like, an example of where there's something that there was an issue. hopefully not a major one, but so you can get a sense. So these changed state. In fact, you can go in and get more detail, a breakdown of all the major moving parts, including here you can see we have a historical view. You can go as far as 30 days back. If, in fact, we look at email and calendar access, or we look at identity or sign-in, these little icons here show you that something has happened. If we click on this, you'll actually see this is the Service Health dashboard updates that took place. First and foremost, you saw very early on we were in an investigating stage, that we're investigating an issue. There may be nothing here. In fact, a lot of times an issue may pop up and it turns out there's nothing that's happening. Then we give you a status of what's occurring. You can see the updates happen at a pretty frequent clip. And then when the service is back to a restored state, we give you a closure summary that explains what happened. And then, you know, some cases we'll say a complete post-incident report will be available within 5 days. So that's the Service Health dashboard. And, you know, with the 0 seconds I have left, I just will briefly go back to my slides. You also have the ability. So, sorry, the big takeaway here is this is your first and best source for if there's something going on. This is regionally driven. We provide you, at a minimum, an hourly update. We have a number of different helpful icons so you can understand the different sets of states. I think the interesting ones are these yellow ones where you can kind of see where we're at in terms of the recovery, and that we try to be as granular as possible so you have lots of confidence in what's going on the service. It's not just something that you have to tether yourself to your Office 365 admin dashboard. You can also use these mobile apps, which if I had time, I would do a quick demo of, but available for the Windows phone, for iOS devices, for Android phones and devices. You can download this app. You can log in with your tenant information, and you get basically the Service Health dashboard to go. And if there was an issue, like you can see that little yellow arrow next to Exchange Online on the left-hand side, you can dig in and get that same information here. And this is also an app that we just launched in November. We've already had like 16,000 tenant admins download this app. And if you haven't done so, I would go to the Windows Store, Google Play, the Apple App Store, and download it. And also know that this is just the first set of things we're doing with this app. Continue watching this admin app for a place to learn more. Well, I apologize for going over. Hopefully, folks don't mind just a few more minutes. Something else that we're doing, again, to help make this as flexible as possible for you, later this year, we're going to be introducing what we call the Service Health API. And this will allow you to take this same information and integrate it in a programmatic fashion into your own existing processes. So let's say, for example, you have a help desk application in your environment that you're utilizing. You create a dashboard to notify your end users about the state and the health of your environment. With the Service Health API, you could query that and pull that same information into your dashboard. And this is something, stay tuned, we'll be providing more details about this. And then last but not least is this Partner Admin Center. Colleagues of mine, Adam Young and Jeff James, did a session on this a couple days ago. I would encourage you to download it. They talk about all the partner tools that are available. In fact, I think Jeff may be standing in the back of the room, so the gentleman standing back there, he can answer your questions about this. This gives you that same view, but on this slide, you can see it's all the customers that you have delegated admin rights to, and you can see their Service Health dashboards, and as well as a number of other activities you can do on behalf of your customers. So in the minus 3 minutes that you have left, your next steps, I will build this out quickly, almost too quickly. I want to encourage you to embrace what change means when you get into the cloud, because it is different, but it's excitingly different, and hopefully you understand the various communication channels we have and the commitments we're making to you to help you understand and embrace and enjoy the benefits of the cloud and knowing what's happening across these different areas of change. Please stay current on functionality that's coming into the service through things like the Office blogs or the system requirements so you can know what platform changes are required. Download this admin app. It's free and it's awesome. And leverage things like the Service Health Dashboard to know what's happening in your tenants. And last but not least, please continue providing your feedback to us. It's super important that we hear from you. We want to be partners in this progress, in this process, rather. And the great way to do that is to keep the communication channel not just one way. My email address is on the slide. The slides will be available through the event site. I think there's other ways to contact me through the event speakers page, so please feel free to always reach out to me. And I really thank you for your time this morning. So thank you very much. In terms of questions, I'm just going to request that maybe we can do it kind of in front of the stage because I want to be respectful for the next presenter who's going to be coming in. So thank you again, and enjoy what's left of the show, and safe travels back home.